Hearty greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Well, today's show on this Monday is all about following up from Friday, bringing you the latest updates on the stories that we covered at the end of last week. And we start with the two Kenyan runners that we heard from on Friday, who were both looking to make their marks in Athens over the weekend. The first was Milton Rotich, who was seeking to not only win the Athens Marathon this past Sunday, but set a course record. Well, it wasn't meant to be for Rotich. He finished second in the race behind his Kenyan countryman, Samuel Kalalai. Our Sunny Side of Sports contributor checked in with Rotich after the race for his reaction.
I'm with Milton Rotich of Kenya, who's finished second in the Athens Marathon, the classic race over the historic course. And as anybody in the marathon world knows, it is a tough, tough, hilly course. And Milton Rotich ran 2:14 and just couldn't match the surge at 35 kilometres from the winner, fellow Kenyan Samuel Kalalai. Milton, look back on the race for me, and how do you rate this? Because you said before the race that you felt you were coming back to form, the form you had 4 years ago before injuries happened. So how do you feel now, for second place in Athens?
Satisfied with the position, because the guy who won was stronger than me.
Well, I was in one of the press cars alongside the two of you leaders, Samuel Kalalai and yourself, from about 30 kilometres onwards, and you both looked very good, and then you have the last 10K going downhill. They're tough. I mean, you looked to be running very relaxed. Did you feel relaxed?
Yeah, I was feeling very relaxed from the start to 30. When we go downhill, my legs, I was feeling tired on my legs after 35, and I let the guy go. I set my own pace.
I think that's one of the features of the Athens course, is that it's up and down, but then the last 10 kilometres or so, or just under 10 kilometres, you're going downhill, and talking to top runners like you, that really bashes your legs. It hurts your legs because you've been going up and down, and then it's a gradual descent. Yeah. Do you feel it in your legs now?
Yeah, the thighs is painful now. Going downhill, you know, you use your weight when you're going downhill, and you hurt yourself. And I'm not good in running down.
Well, there's always something to work on, I suppose. I mean, take stock. We talked before the race that, 4 years ago you were running 2:08:55, and then in 2014 you ran 2:09, and then you had injuries. Okay, nobody's going to run, well, they haven't so far run a world record, a super, super fast time in Athens. But you've run 2:14, so where do you go from here?
From here, I'm going to rest for a few weeks. Then I begin training. Then I'll see what next.
You talk about your legs feeling it, the downhills. Yeah. I mean, do you make a point of, say, getting massage or any treatment when you go back to Kenya? Or do you just rest, walk, and that's it?
Yeah, I will rest for it to recover and little massage.
Historians of running say, well, of course, the legend is this is the original marathon, you know, long ago. But when you're racing and you've got prize money in front of you, etc., do you have any time to think about it? Oh, well, I'm running on the original marathon course?
I didn't know about the Athens being the original marathon. But when I came here, I heard about the history of it. And I was so excited. And when I was running, I feel that this is something extraordinary for me to run here.
Well, you certainly put in a fine performance. Second place for Milton Rotich of Kenya on the historic course, the Athens Marathon. Thanks very much, Milton.
Thank you.
That was our Sunny Side of Sports contributor, Andy Edwards, speaking to Athens Marathon runner-up Milton Rutich. Now, the other Kenyan runner we heard from on Friday's show was Mary Katani. Katani was in Athens this weekend, but not to run the marathon. She was there as a finalist for the Association of International Marathon and Distance Races Best Female Marathoner of the Year Award. And on Friday night, Katani won that award for the fifth time, beating Roj Chelimo, who is representing Bahrain. Once again, here's Andy Edwards, who spoke with Katani after her big win.
Well, congratulations, Mary. You're the Ames Best Marathon Runner of 2017. And, of course, so many marathon fans around the world will think of that women's only world record, 2 hours 17.01, you ran to win the London Marathon in April. When you went into that race, did you know that you were in the shape to do something special?
Thank you so much. I'm happy that I've won the Ames, and it was a pleasure for me and honor to be in Athens this weekend to get a present. So I know when I was going to run record for women only, I know I was very ready, and I try my best to run as fast as I can, and that's why I did 2:17.01, and it was nullified that it was women only record. So for me it was just amazing. And also, I said it's a motivation, and it will give me to still continue with the with that potential of doing much.
Of course, we know that the women's world record outright in terms of paced racing is 2:15.23. I mean, do you think that's within your capability now? You recognise as the number one for 2017?
For me, I think sometimes I used to say that there is time for everything. So maybe in future, because I've been saying this marathon for women only, that one of us might break, of which it has been me who break it. Because I say it as early as 2014, because always people of media used to ask me about this kind of women only record, and I told them one day, one time we will try to beat. If it's me, I will try to do it. If it's another one, no problem. But in any case, we will just try to break it. So, and we have done it. As especially in my side, I'm saying that it was really an honor that I try my best to win the women records only. So this one of 2:15 is maybe I can say I'm still able to try to run my PB from I think to run below 2:17. So I don't know how they will do the one for the both men's. I mean paced by men's, and for me to run under 2:17 is still possible.
Mary, you're the Ames Best Marathon Runner of 2017. Congratulations. Look forward to seeing many more races from you in future. Mary Katani of Kenya, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to our Sunny Side of Sports contributor, Andy Edwards, for those interviews in Athens. Now, also back on Friday, we heard the first part of our interview with Francis Tiafo. He's the 19-year-old American quickly making his mark in the tennis world after turning pro in 2015. In part two, Sonny and I continue the conversation by asking Francis about his life on the road, his hopes for 2018, and his connection to Sierra Leone. But we start by asking about something that 19-year-olds around the world deal with every day, whether they're professional tennis players or not. Social media.
I just try to be as real as possible on social media. You know, just, no, I'm not doing it for the fans. I mean, I just want to put out there like who I really am, you know, not just trying to impress anyone, just putting up stuff that I think is fun and showing people that I'm just like them. I just know how to play tennis, and that's pretty much it.
Francis, little history lesson here. The Voice of America is celebrating the 75th anniversary of its very first broadcast. We broadcast all over the world, including Sierra Leone, where your parents are from. And before we came in the studio, you mentioned how you visited Sierra Leone. Do you have memories of that trip?
Yeah. 10, 11 years ago, but yeah, I do. I mean, it was unbelievable to see that, to see where my parents really grew up, everything they had to go through to get through the States. But yeah, I mean, I was happy I got to see that. You know, it was good for me and my brother to be in that environment. Just remember that, you know, having life in America is a great opportunity, and you never take that for granted, and respect everyone, and you know, just values go a long way. So we learned this so many, like, I can go on and on how many lessons I learned from that trip, and that made me a better man today, and I'm always gonna remember that. So, but yeah, I plan on doing many things for that country down the stretch. Obviously, I work towards that. You know, you play for way more than yourself. It's bigger than tennis. You know, trying to inspire, you know, kids there. You know, kids all around in the States. So that's what I'm trying to do.
What about Davis Cup? Is that part of your plan of, you know, playing for your country?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, obviously love to hold the Davis Cup trophy. I think you know, those events are huge. You know, we get a good team behind us, and we get a win. That'll be huge for American tennis. Obviously, you know, stop you know, the doubt with American fans and saying that, you know, this, that, and the other. But yeah, I mean, whenever my ranking is high enough, I'll definitely be on Davis Cup ties, for sure.
2017 brought you a lot of great moments. It's the highest your ranking has been so far, and very early in your career. You went those five sets with Roger Federer. You beat Alexander Zverev at the Cincinnati Masters. What are the goals for 2018? Obviously, you want to win, but are there any particular tournaments you're looking at, or maybe a specific number that you want to be at as far as rankings?
I want to be around in the 30s, if not top 30, by the end of next year. I'm, you know, 70-something now, and I think, you know, I think when I'm playing my best, I can beat anyone. I feel comfortable playing anyone on tour. There's no match I walk into that I don't think I can win. But yeah, I mean, the Pacific tournaments I'm going to look at is slams, trying to go in the second week of slams and the thousands. I mean, every event, every week is big, but you know, the bigger events, I really want to make a dent there, because obviously, you know, I've beaten the very few three in the world, and you know, just I've had a ton of great matches against high caliber players. So again, you know, those big events are, you know, where a lot of money is, and where obviously, you know, a lot of points are. So you know, that's where you want to peak.
Francis, earlier you said how Jack Sock is one of your friends on the tour. Sock, a surprise qualifier for the ATP Finals in London. How do you see that tournament next week in the British capital in terms of the competition?
I think it's great. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of guys are injured. So, I mean, it's a little different feel than it probably would be. But I think it's unbelievable that he qualified. I mean, he was having some rough couple of weeks. Obviously, you know, during Wimby, what happened to him, you know, with his knee and everything. So I think, you know, winning this event is going to give him a lot of confidence. And I hope he only just takes it and runs with it. I think he can do a ton of great things, stay in the top 10. I think he's a top 10 player regardless of those guys being out. But I just hope he doesn't be content with this, because he can do way more.
I'll have one final question before you go, Francis. Anything you would like to say to our listeners in Sierra Leone or across Africa?
I'm out here, you know, competing for you guys every day in, day out, you know, putting in day in, day out for you guys, and I plan to do many things for you guys. So keep following me, and I'll be putting in for you guys.
So here's a Sunny Side of Sports shout out to Francis Tiafo. Big Foe is his nickname, and he's preparing for the 2018 tennis season and what's shaping up to be a fantastic tennis career. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. Some things change, some remain the same. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Joining me now in the studio to talk about some of the latest sports trends and news is Dan Friedel. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, Andrew. It's nice to see you in person.
Yes, good to see you here, not on the phone.
Looking forward to talking about the next part of the American sports calendar. Now that the World Series is in the books, a couple weeks ago, we saw an exciting seven-game series. I think that we talked about that as a possibility one of the times I was on the line with Sonny. And the Houston Astros winning their first ever World Series against the Dodgers. That was pretty exciting.
Yeah, amazing. Not just for the sports world, but for the city of Houston. I know we talked about their recovery from the hurricane, Hurricane Harvey, that devastated that city. So it was a nice boost for them in that regard as well.
Absolutely. It was an exciting World Series. The only thing I think that it's kind of funny is every year everybody seems to say, this was the best World Series ever. And we forget last year, Cleveland and Chicago, these two teams that hadn't won in so long, going to extra innings in Game 7. It was a fun spring summer season, and I'm looking forward to the winter sports now.
Yeah, and there's a lot to talk about with the winter sports. You know, the National Basketball Association just over a month into their 2017-2018 season, and already some very interesting storylines starting to emerge. The Cleveland Cavaliers off to a slow start, kind of befuddling some folks, and the flip side of that, the Boston Celtics. On fire, winning 12 in a row now to give them the league best record of 12-2. So they lost their first two, they went on a tear, now they've won 12 in a row, and they just keep adding to that record that they've set.
Well, you remember that first game of the season, there was that horrific injury to Boston's forward, Gordon Hayward, who was recruited from the Utah Jazz to reunite with his college coach, Brad Stevens, in Boston. Hayward was thought to be one of the missing parts of the puzzle to help get the Celtics perhaps over the hump into the NBA Finals, where they had, been losing in the Eastern Conference to the Cleveland Cavaliers for a couple years in a row. And he goes up to get an alley-oop pass and comes down and breaks his leg, dislocates his ankle. He's screaming in pain on the floor. Everybody's worried about, really not just the season, but his career. I mean, we've seen athletes like that go downhill quickly after these kinds of really bad injuries. You know, a lot of people talked about when Paul George got hurt in a summer game, I think, getting ready for the Olympics a few years ago, wondering whether he would be able to come back. I mean, now he has come back, and he's doing fine with the Oklahoma City Thunder now, moving on from Indiana. I guess all signs point to Hayward maybe making a good recovery. And the Celtics have done fine without him, which is kind of surprising. I mean, Kyrie Irving, the big addition, really kind of trumping Hayward's arrival in the trade from Cleveland, where the two big names going in that trade were Isaiah Thomas going from Boston to Cleveland and Irving going from Cleveland to Boston. Irving is out there, and he's performing extremely well. People are talking about him as a potential MVP candidate. As you said, the Celtics have won 12 in a row.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because when you look back in the offseason when Boston and Cleveland made that big trade, a lot of people said Cleveland got the better end of the deal, but it doesn't reflect that so far in the records. I know the season is very new yet, and we still have months and months to play, but so far Boston seems to be running away with things.
I mean, especially the Cavs are waiting for the return of Isaiah Thomas, who hasn't played yet this year. They're expecting him to come back early in 2018, which, of course, now is only a couple months away. Thomas is a dynamic offensive player, and his detriment is the fact that he can be game planned against in the playoffs, but during the regular season he's a 30 point a game scorer, and Irving during the regular season is a 25 plus point a game scorer. So you take 30 points or kind of a net 25 points away from the Cavs, they're going to have trouble covering up for that, even though they got some off-season reinforcements. LeBron is an amazing player, and I think everybody in Cleveland believes in him as somebody who's going to help the Cavs win 50 to 60 games. They're below 500 at this point, 6-7. And they've struggled. They've lost games to bad teams this year already. And the question is, are they going to be able to stay afloat and stay within playoff contention until they kind of get back into a groove when Thomas returns early next year? So it'll be interesting to see how the Cavs can handle this next, let's say, 30-game period before Thomas comes back. The only thing the Cavs really have to point to this season is their big win, 10 days or so ago against the Wizards when LeBron scored 57 points here in Washington. It'll be interesting to see how the Cavs manage to handle the next couple of months.
Yeah, and on the West, Golden State leading right now in the West. I know a lot of fans want that four-peat. They want to see Golden State and Cleveland back in the finals for the fourth time in a row. But a lot of fans, too, want to see some new teams come in there. And so we'll have to see how that shakes out. But so far, at least in the West, Golden State, I believe they're at 10-3, keeping up their end of the bargain for fans who want to see them back in the finals.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest moves so far in the Western Conference is the fact that Eric Bledsoe, who is a key player for the Phoenix Suns, has moved into the other division in the West and is now playing for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's moved into the Milwaukee Bucks rotation, into the other conference, and teaming up with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's probably been the most exciting player this year. The combination of Bledsoe, Antetokounmpo, some of the other players on the Bucks. I mean, right now Milwaukee is only 6-6, but people are talking about this young player. You know, he's a Greek player, but his family is African. He's one of the most unique players in the NBA. People have talked about him as being really part of this new generation. He's still so young, but he is kind of one of these players, like even Kristaps Porzingis, who is over 7 feet tall for the New York Knicks, but being very athletic, kind of building on the footsteps of some of these players from the 80s and 90s who have been kind of, you can't really classify them just by their height, that their athleticism supersedes anything that you might see on paper. They're saying that he might have one of the most unique statistical seasons in the history of the NBA, scoring 30 points a game, averaging 30 points a game, and averaging 60% field goals. I don't think that that's been done recently, if ever. So that's a great team to watch. If you're looking for another team, the team I just mentioned, Minnesota, has a lot of strong young players. You know, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins. That's a team to keep an eye on as well in the West. You know, one of these teams that if they get going, they could really upset some of the kind of the tried and true top level teams in their conferences as we get into, you know, April and May of next year when we're looking for elimination games.
Yeah, and I think that's as much as fans are excited to see these new players, they do want to see some new teams try to make a run at it, maybe buoyed by some of those new players on the team. So we'll have to see how things shake out. I'll put you on the spot. Do you think we're going to get the four-peat? Do you think Cleveland and Golden State are going to go back to the finals?
I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to say Golden State is in the finals again. I mean, they're off to a strong enough start. They have these outstanding players. I don't really think anybody can match up with them on a 7-game series basis. You have teams like Houston that look good with James Harden and Chris Paul now. I think Golden State, if you had to put money on it, Golden State in the finals. And I think Cleveland definitely is going to have a challenge, a harder challenge than they have had in recent years. Whether it's Boston, whether it's a team like Milwaukee. I mean, the Cavs will be there, but they're going to have to grind it out. You know, if they get to the finals, it'll be an Eastern Conference championship game, 7-game series kind of thing. So, you know,
fight for it.
It's probably a 50-50 proposition for the Cavs when in the past it's been 90-10.
All right. Well, don't pencil in the Cavs just yet is what I'm getting from that. We've got about a minute left, but I want to talk also about Major League Baseball, because even though the season has ended, as you mentioned, a bunch of new managers being hired by teams, and they're all very young and new. Very unusual to see this many new faces in the managerial positions in the Major League Baseball.
Right. I'm looking at the list right here. We have a couple of previous type A managers. I mean, Ron Gardenhire going to the Tigers. He was a longtime manager for the Minnesota Twins, who took some time off from managing. But the Boston Red Sox got rid of John Farrell and hired Alex Cora, who had a long major league career, now is moving into the front end job as the manager with the Red Sox. That's a pressure filled job. It'll be interesting to see. And the other thing that's notable is some of these teams have made changes that have already been in the playoffs. You look at our local Washington Nationals winning over 95 games the last 2 years, getting rid of Dusty Baker, who's one of the most accomplished managers right now, who has not won a World Series. Dave Martinez, the bench coach for a long time for the Chicago Cubs, last year's World Series champions, now has a chance to take the reins of the Nats. The New York Mets were in the World Series just 2 years ago. Mickey Callaway is taking over. He was the former pitching coach for the Cleveland Indians. And the New York Yankees don't have a manager.
They don't have a manager yet.
And they're not even going to hire anybody anytime soon. So we'll see what happens in New York.
We'll see what happens. Dan Friedel, thank you so much. That wraps up our November 13th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer John Dryden, and thank all of you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Each November, the world marks the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. Around the world, journalists often work at great personal risk to shine a light on abuses and corruption, expose threats posed by transnational criminal organizations, and counter disinformation and propaganda. These efforts play an indispensable role in the healthy functioning of our own democracy and also underpin democratic values around the world, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. Due to their profession, journalists are often under threat from those who wish to silence them. In too many parts of the world, crimes against journalists go unpunished. In Syria, both local and foreign journalists have regularly been attacked and killed while reporting on the conflict. In Venezuela, the government arbitrarily closes media outlets as punishment for reporting facts or maintaining an editorial line critical of the regime. Security forces and armed colectivos that harassed and physically attacked journalists during protests earlier this year remain unpunished. In Iraq, media workers report accounts of intimidation, death threats, and harassment. In Sudan, the government arrests, harasses, and intimidates journalists with impunity. In Uganda, security forces continue to intimidate journalists and media houses, and government officials have shut down radio stations for broadcasting voices in opposition to the government. In Nigeria and South Sudan, there is no evidence of accountability for police and their officials who have abused journalists. For the third year in a row, Somalia holds the world's worst record for unsolved murders of journalists. In Russia, the lack of progress toward any accountability for the killing of high-profile journalists persists. In Turkey, perpetrators of attacks against journalists or independent media institutions often receive minimal penalties. This impunity has been exacerbated by the use of the judicial system to target independent media. In Azerbaijan, 9 out of 10 physical attacks against journalists go unsolved. Together with others in the international community, the United States will continue working to eliminate impunity for crimes against journalists. The United States renews its dedication to promoting a free, professional, and independent press abroad, and to advocating for accountability for those who would undermine a free press with threats, intimidation, and violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News. VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.